This was my first voyage as pilot. I was outward bound. Why are you here?
Jesuits put me here, my son. Jesuits and their filthy lies. The Señor was outward bound. Thou art not Spanish, no, nor Portuguese.
The monk peered at him suspiciously, and Blackthorn was surrounded by his reeking breath.
Was the ship Portuguese? Tell the truth before God.
No, father, it was not Portuguese. Before God.
Oh, blessed Virgin, thank you. Please forgive me, Señor. I was afraid. I'm old and stupid and diseased. The ship was Spanish, out of where? I'm so glad. Where is the Señor from originally? Spanish Flanders? Or the Duchy of Brandenburg, perhaps? Some part of our dominions in Germania? Oh, it's so good to talk my blessed mother tongue again. Was the Señor shipwrecked like us? Then foully thrown into this jail, falsely accused by those devil Jesuits? May God curse them and show them the error of their treachery.
His eyes glittered fiercely.
The Señor said he has never been to Asia before.
No.
If the Señor has never been to Asia before, then he will be like a child in the wilderness. Yes, there's so much to tell. Does the Señor know that Jesuits are merely traitors, gunrunners and usurers? That they control all the silk trade here, all trade with China? That the annual black ship is worth $1 million in gold? That they forced His Holiness the Pope to grant them total power over Asia, them and their dogs, the Portuguese? That all other religions are forbidden here? That Jesuits deal in gold, buying and selling for profit, for themselves and the heathen, against the direct orders of His Holiness Pope Clement, of King Philip, and against the laws of this land? That they secretly smuggled guns into Japan for Christian kings here, inciting them to rebellion? That they meddle in politics and pimp for the kings, lie and cheat and bear false witness against us? That their father superior himself sent a secret message to our Spanish viceroy in Luzon, asking him for conquistadores to conquer the land? They begged for a Spanish invasion to cover more Portuguese mistakes. All our troubles can be put at their threshold, Señor. It's the Jesuits who have lied and cheated and spread poison against Spain and our beloved King Philip. Their lies put me here and caused 26 holy fathers to be martyred. They think that just because I was a peasant once, I don't understand. But I can read and write, Señor. I can read and write. I was one of His Excellency's secretaries, the Viceroy. They think we Franciscans don't understand.
At this point, he broke into another ranting jumble of Spanish and Latin. Blackthorn's spirit had been revived, his curiosity agog with what the priest had said. What guns? What gold? What trade? What black ship? $1 million? What invasion? What Christian kings? Aren't you cheating the poor sick man? He asked himself. He thinks you're friend, not enemy. I haven't lied to him. But haven't you implied you're friend? I answered him directly. But you volunteered nothing? No. Is that fair? That's the first rule of survival in enemy waters. Volunteer nothing. The monk's tantrum grew apace. The nearby Japanese shifted uneasily. One of them got up and shook the priest gently and spoke to him. Father Domingo gradually came out of his fit. His eyes cleared. He looked at Blackthorn with recognition, replied to the Japanese, and calmed the rest.
So sorry, Señor.
he said breathlessly.
They thought I was angry against the Signor. God forgive my foolish rage. It was just... Giver! Jesuits come from hell, along with heretics and heathens. I can tell you much about them.
The monk wiped the spittle off his chin and tried to calm himself. He pressed his chest to ease the pain there.
The Signor was saying, thy ship, it was cast ashore.
Yes, in a way. We came aground, Blackthorn replied. He eased his legs carefully. The men who were watching and listening gave him more room. One got up and motioned him to stretch out. Thanks, he said at once. Oh, how do you say thank you, Father?
Domo. Sometimes you say arigato. A woman has to be very polite, Signor. She says, arigato gozaimashita.
Thank you. What's his name? Blackthorn indicated the man who had got up.
That's Gonzales.
But what's his Japanese name?
Oh, yes. He's Akabo. But that just means porter, Signor. They don't have names. Only samurai have names.
What?
Only samurai have names, first names and surnames. It's their law, Signor. Everyone else has to make do with what they are. Porter, fisherman, cook, executioner, farmer, and so on. Sons and daughters are mostly just first daughter, second daughter, first son, and so on. Sometimes they'd call a man fisherman who lives near the elm tree, or fisherman with bad eyes.
The monk shrugged and stifled a yawn.
Ordinary Japanese aren't allowed names. Whores give themselves names like carp, or moon, or petal, or eel, or star. It's strange, Signor, but it's their law. We give them Christian names, real names, when we baptize them, bringing them salvation and the word of God.
His words trailed off, and he slept. Domo, Akabo-san, Blackthorn said to the porter. The man smiled shyly and bowed and sucked in his breath. Later, the monk awakened and said a brief prayer and scratched.
Only yesterday, the Signor said. He came here only yesterday. What occurred with the Signor?
When we landed, there was a Jesuit there, Blackthorn said. But you, Father, you were saying they accused you. What happened to you and your ship?
Our ship? Did the Signor ask about our ship? Was the Signor coming from Manila, like us? Oh, how foolish of me. I remember now. The Signor was outward bound from home, and never in Asia before. By the blessed body of Christ, it's so good to talk to a civilized man again, in my blessed mother's tongue. Kiva, it's been so long. My head aches, Signor. Our ship? We were going home at long last, home from Manila to Acapulco, in the land of Cortes, in Mexico, thence overland to Veracruz, and thence another ship, and across the Atlantic, and at long, long last, to home. My village is outside Madrid, Signor, in the mountains. It is called Santa Veronica. 40 years I've been away, Signor, in the New World, in Mexico, and in the Philippines. Always with our glorious conquistadores. May the Virgin watch over them. I was in Luzon when we destroyed the heathen native king Lumalon and conquered Luzon and so brought the word of God to the Philippines. Many of our Japan converts fought with us even then, Signor. Such fighters. That was in 1575. Mother Church is well planted there, my son, and never a filthy Jesuit or Portuguese to be seen. I came to the Japans for almost 2 years, then had to leave for Manila again when the Jesuits betrayed us.
The monk stopped and closed his eyes, drifting off. Later, he came back again, and as old people will sometimes do, he continued as though he had never slept.
My ship was the great galleon San Felipe. We carried a cargo of spices, gold and silver, and specie to the value of 1.5 million silver pesos. One of the great storms took us and cast us onto the shores of Chicoco. Our ship broke her back on the sandbar on the third day. By that time, we had landed our bullion and most of our cargo. Then word came that everything was confiscated. Confiscated by the Taiko himself. That we were pirates and...
He stopped at the sudden silence. The iron door of the cell cage had swung open. Guards began to call names from the list. Bulldog, the man who had befriended Blackthorn, was one of those called. He walked out and did not look back. One of the men in the circle also was chosen. Acabo. Acabo knelt to the monk, who blessed him and made the sign of the cross over him, and quickly gave him the last sacrament. The man kissed the cross and walked away. The door closed again. "They're going to execute him?" Blackthorn asked.
"Yes. His Calvary is outside the door. May the Holy Madonna take his soul swiftly and give him his everlasting reward."
"What did that man do?"
"He broke the law. Their law, senor. The Japanese are a simple people, and very severe. They truly have only one punishment, death. By the cross, by strangulation, or by decapitation. For the crime of arson, it is death by burning. They have almost no other punishment. Banishment sometimes, cutting the hair from women sometimes. But..."
The old man sighed.
"But most always, it is death."
"You forgot imprisonment." The monk's nails picked absently at the scabs on his arm.
"It's not one of their punishments, my son. To them, prison is just a temporary place to keep the man until they decide his sentence. Only the guilty come here for just a little while."
"That's nonsense. What about you? You've been here a year, almost 2 years."
"One day they will come for me, like all the others. This is but a resting place between the hell of earth and the glory of everlasting life."
"I don't believe you."
"Have no fear, my son. It is the will of God. I am here and can hear the Signor's confession and give him absolution and make him perfect. The glory of everlasting life is barely 100 steps and moments away from that door. Would the Signor like me to hear his confession now?"
"No. No, thank you. Not now." Blackthorn looked at the iron door. "Has anyone ever tried to break out of here?"
"Why should they do that? There is nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. The authorities are very strict. Anyone helping an escaped convict, or even a man who commits a crime..."
He pointed vaguely at the door of the hut.
"Gonzalez, Acabo, the man who has left us. He's a Kaga man. He told me."
"What's a Kaga man?"
"Oh, those are the porters, senor. The men that carry the palanquins. Or the smaller two-man Kaga, that's like a hammock swung on a pole. He told us his partner stole a silken scarf from a customer, poor fellow. And because he himself did not report the theft, his life is forfeit also. The Signor may believe me. To try to escape, or even to help someone to escape, the man would lose his life and all his family. They are very severe, Signor."
"So everyone goes to execution, like sheep, then?"
"There is no other choice. It is the will of God."
"Don't get angry, or panic. Blackthorn warned himself. Be patient. You can think of a way. Not everything the priest says is true. He's deranged. Who wouldn't be, after so much time?
These prisons are new to them, Signor,
the monk was saying.
The Taiko instituted prisons here a few years ago, so they say. Before him, there were none. In previous days, when a man was caught, he confessed his crime and he was executed.
And if he didn't confess?
Everyone confesses. Sooner is better, Signor. It is the same in our world, if you are caught.
The monk slept a little, scratching in his sleep and muttering. When he woke up, Blackthorn said, Please tell me, Father, how the cursed Jesuits put a man of God in this pest hole.
There is not much to tell, and everything. After the Taiko's men came and took all our bullion and goods, our Captain General insisted on going to the capital to protest. There was no cause for the confiscation. Were we not servants of His Most Imperial Catholic Majesty, King Philip of Spain, ruler of the greatest and richest empire in the world, the most powerful monarch in the world? Were we not friends? Was not the Taiko asking Spanish Manila to trade direct with Japan, to break the filthy monopoly of the Portuguese? It was all a mistake, the confiscation. It had to be. I went with our Captain General because I could speak a little Japanese. Not much in those days. Signor, the San Felipe had floundered and come ashore in October of 1597. The Jesuits, one was of the name Father Martin Alvito, they dared to offer to mediate for us there in Kyoto, the capital. The impertinence! Our Franciscan Father Superior, Friar Braganza, he was in the capital, and he was an ambassador, a real ambassador from Spain to the court of the Taiko. The blessed Friar Braganza, he had been there in the capital in Kyoto for 5 years, Signor. The Taiko himself, personally, had asked our viceroy in Manila to send Franciscan monks and an ambassador to Japan. So the blessed Friar Braganza had come. And we, Signor, we of the San Felipe, we knew that he was to be trusted, not like the Jesuits. After many, many days of waiting, we had one interview with the Taiko. He was a tiny, ugly little man, Signor. And we asked for our goods back, and another ship, or passage on another ship, which our Captain General offered to pay for handsomely. The interview went well, we thought, and the Taiko dismissed us. We went to our monastery in Kyoto and waited. And then, over the next months, while we waited for his decision, we continued to bring the word of God to the heathen. We held our services openly, not like thieves in the night, as the Jesuits do.
Friar Domingo's voice was edged with contempt.
We wore our habits and vestments. We didn't go disguised, like native priests, as they do. We brought the word to the people, the halt and sick and poor. Not like the Jesuits, who consort with princes only. Our congregations increased. We had a hospital for lepers, our own church, and our flock prospered, Signor. Greatly. We were about to convert many of their kings, and then one day we were betrayed. One day in January, we Franciscans, we were all brought before the magistrate and accused under the Taiko's personal seal, Signor, accused as violators of their law, as disturbers of their peace, and sentenced to death by crucifixion. There were 43 of us. Our churches throughout the land were to be destroyed, all our congregations to be torn apart, Franciscan, not Jesuit, Signor, just us, Signor. We had been falsely accused. The Jesuits had poured poison in the Tycho's ear, that we were conquistadores, that we wanted to invade these shores, when it was Jesuits who begged His Excellency, our Viceroy, to send an army from Manila. I saw the letter myself, from their Father Superior. They're devils who pretend to serve the Church and Christ, but they serve only themselves. They lust for power, power at any cost. They hide behind a net of poverty and piousness, but underneath they feed like kings and amass fortunes. Que va, Señor? The truth is that they were jealous of our congregations, jealous of our church, jealous of our truth and way of life. The daimyo of Hizen, Don Francisco, his Japanese name is Harima Tadao, but he has been baptized, Don Francisco. He interceded for us. He is just like a king. All daimyos are like kings. And he's a Franciscan, and he interceded for us, but to no avail. In the end, 26 were martyred, 6 Spaniards, 17 of our Japanese neophytes, and 3 others. The Blessed Braganza was one, and there were 3 boys among the neophytes. Oh, Señor, the faithful were there in their thousands that day. 50, 100,000 people watched the blessed martyrdom at Nagasaki, so I was told. It was a bitter cold February day and a bitter year. That was the year of the earthquakes and typhoons and flood and storm and fire, when the hand of God lay heavy on the great murderer and even smashed down his great castle, Fushimi, when he shuddered the earth. It was terrifying but marvellous to behold the finger of God punishing the heathen and the sinners. So they were martyred, Señor. 6 good Spaniards. Our flock and our church were laid waste, and the hospital closed up.
The old man's face drained.
I was one of those chosen for martyrdom, but it was not to be my honour. They set us marching from Kyoto, and when we came to Osaka, they put some of us in one of our missions here, and the rest had one of their ears cut off. Then they were paraded like common criminals in the streets. Then the blessed brethren were set walking westward. For a month, their blessed journey ended at the hill called Nishizaki, overlooking the great harbour of Nagasaki. I begged the samurai to let me go with them, but, Señor, he ordered me back to the mission here in Osaka. For no reason. And then, months later, we were put in this cell. There were 3 of us. I think it was 3, but I was the only Spaniard. The others were neophytes, our lay brothers, Japaners. A few days later, the guards called out their names, but they never called out mine. Perhaps it is the will of God, Señor, or perhaps those filthy Jesuits leave me alive just to torture me. They who took away my chance at martyrdom among my own. It's hard, Señor, to be patient. So very hard.
The old monk closed his eyes, prayed, and cried himself to sleep. Much as he wished it, Blackthorn could not sleep, though night had come. His flesh crawled from the lice bites. His head swarmed with terror. He knew, with terrible clarity, there was no way to break out. He was overwhelmed with futility, and sensed he was on the brink of death. In the darkest part of the night, terror swamped him, and for the first time in his life, he gave up and wept.
Yes, my son,
the monk murmured.
What is it?
Nothing. Nothing, Blackthorn said, his heart thundering. Go back to sleep.
There's no need to fear. We are all in God's hands,
the monk said, and slept again. The Great Terror left Blackthorn. In its place was a terror that could be lived with. "I'll get out of here somehow," he told himself, trying to believe the lie. At dawn came food and water. Blackthorn was stronger now. "Stupid to let go like that," he cautioned himself. "Stupid and weak and dangerous. Don't do that again, or you'll break and go mad and surely die. They'll put you in the third row, and you'll die. Be careful, and be patient, and guard yourself."
"How are you today, Signor?"
"Fine, thank you, Father. And you?"
"Quite well, thank you."
"How do I say that in Japanese?"
"Domo, genki desu."
"Domo, genki desu. You were saying yesterday, Father, about the Portuguese black ships. What are they like? Have you seen one?"
"Oh, yes, Signor. They're the greatest ships in the world. Almost 2,000 tons. As many as 200 men and boys are necessary to sail one, Signor. And with crew and passengers, her complement would be almost 1,000 souls. I'm told these carracks sail well before the wind, but lumber when the wind's abeam."
"How many guns do they carry?"
"Sometimes 20 or 30, on 3 decks.
Father Domingo was glad to answer questions and talk and teach, and Blackthorn was equally glad to listen and learn. The monk's rambling knowledge was priceless and far-reaching.
"No, Signor,"
he was saying now.
"Domo is thank you, and dozo is please. Water is mizu. Always remember that Japan has put a great price on manners and courtesy. Once, when I was in Nagasaki..." "Oh, if I only had ink and a quill and paper! Oh, I know. Here, trace the words in the dirt. That will help me to remember them."
"Domo," Blackthorn said. Then, after memorizing a few more words, he asked, "How long have Portuguese been here?"
"Oh, the land was discovered in 1542, Signor, the year I was born. There were 3 men, Damota, Peixoto, and I can't remember the other name. They were all Portuguese traders, trading the China coasts in a China junk from a port in Siam. Has the Signor been to Siam?"
"No."
"Ah, there is much to see in Asia. These 3 men were trading, but they were caught in a great storm, a typhoon, and blown off their course to land safely at Tanegashima, at Kyushu. That was the first time a European set foot on Japan's soil, and at once trade began. A few years later, Francis Xavier, one of the founding members of the Jesuits, arrived here. That was in 1549. A bad year for Japan, Signor. One of our brethren should have been first, then we would have inherited this realm, not the Portuguese. Francis Xavier died 3 years later in China, alone and forsaken. Did I tell the Signor there's a Jesuit already at the court of the Emperor of China, in a place called Peking? Oh, you should see Manila, Signor, and the Philippines. We have 4 cathedrals and almost 3,000 conquistadores and nearly 6,000 Japana soldiers spread through the islands and 300 brethren.
Blackthorn's mind filled with facts and Japanese words and phrases. He asked about life in Japan and daimyos and samurai and trade and Nagasaki and war and peace and Jesuits and Franciscans and Portuguese in Asia and about Spanish Manila, and always more about the black ship that plied annually from Macau. For 3 days and 3 nights, Blackthorn sat with Father Domingo and questioned and listened and learned and slept in nightmare, to awaken and ask more questions and gain more knowledge. Then, on the 4th day, they called out his name.
"Anjin-san!"
Chapter 15. In the utter silence, Blackthorn got to his feet.
Thy confession, my son. Say it quickly.
I don't think. Blackthorn realized through his dulled mind that he was speaking English, so he pressed his lips together and began to walk away. The monk scrambled up, presuming his words to be Dutch or German, and grabbed his wrist and hobbled with him.
Quickly, senor, I will give thee absolution. Be quick, for thine immortal soul. Say it quickly, just that the senor confesses before God all things past and present.
They were nearing the iron gate now, the monk holding on to Blackthorn with surprising strength.
Say it now! The Blessed Virgin will watch over you!
Blackthorn tore his arm away and said hoarsely in Spanish, Go with God, Father! The door slammed behind him. The day was incredibly cool and sweet, the clouds meandering before a fine southeasterly wind. He inhaled deep draughts of the clean, glorious air, and blood surged through his veins. The joy of life possessed him. Several naked prisoners were in the courtyard, along with an official, jailers with spears, Eta, and a group of samurai. The official was dressed in a somber kimono and an overmantle with starched wing-like shoulders, and he wore a small dark hat. This man stood in front of the first prisoner, and read from a delicate scroll, and as he finished, each man began to plod after his party of jailers toward the great doors of the courtyard. Blackthorn was last. Unlike the others, he was given a loincloth, cotton kimono, and thonged clogs for his feet. And his guards were samurai. He had decided to run for it the moment he had passed the gate, but as he approached the threshold, the samurai surrounded him more closely and locked him in. They reached the gateway together. A large crowd looked on, clean and spruce, with crimson and yellow and golden sunshades. One man was already roped to his cross, and the cross was lifted into the sky. And beside each cross, two Eta waited, their long lances sparkling in the sun. Blackthorn's pace slowed. The samurai jostled closer, hurrying him. He thought numbly that it would be the better to die now, quickly, so he steadied his hand to lunge for the nearest sword. But he never took the opportunity, because the samurai turned away from the arena and walked toward the perimeter, heading for the streets that led to the city and toward the castle. Blackthorn waited, scarcely breathing, wanting to be sure. They walked through the crowd, who backed away and bowed, and then they were in a street, and now there was no mistake. Blackthorn felt reborn. When he could speak, he said, Where are we going? Not caring that the words would not be understood, or that they were in English. Blackthorn was quite light-headed. His step hardly touched the ground, the thongs of his clogs were not uncomfortable, the untoward touch of the kimono was not unpleasing. Actually, it feels quite good, he thought. A little draughty, perhaps, but on a fine day like this, just the sort of thing to wear on the quarterdeck. By God, it's wonderful to speak English again, he said to the samurai. Christ Jesus, I thought I was a dead man. That's my 8th life gone. Do you know that, old friends? Now I've only one to go. Well, never mind. Pilots have 10 lives at least. That's what Alban Caradoc used to say. The samurai seemed to be growing irritated by his incomprehensible talk. Get hold of yourself, he told himself. Don't make them touchier than they are. He noticed now that the samurai were all greys. Ishido's men. He had asked Father Alvito the name of the man who opposed Toranaga. Alvito had said, Ishido. That was just before he had been ordered to stand up and had been taken away. Are all greys Ishido's men? As all browns are Toranaga's? Where are we going? There? He pointed at the castle, which brooded above the town. There? Hi? Hi. The leader nodded a cannonball head, his beard grizzled. What does Ishido want with me?
Blackthorn asked himself. The leader turned into another street, always going away from the harbour. Then he saw her, a small Portuguese brig, her blue and white flag waving in the breeze. 10 cannon on the main deck, with bow and stern 20-pounders.
Erasmus could take her easily, Blackthorn told himself. What about my crew? What are they doing back there at the village? By the blood of Christ, I'd like to see them. I was so glad to leave them that day and go back to my own house, where Honor, Haku, was. The house of... what was his name? Yes, Murasan. And what about that girl? The one in my floor bed? And the other one? The angel beauty he talked that day to Omi-san? The one in the dream, who was in the cauldron, too.
But why remember that nonsense? It weakens the mind. You've got to be very strong in the head to live with the sea, Auburn Caradoc had said.
Poor Auburn. Auburn Caradoc had always appeared so huge and godlike, all-seeing, all-knowing, for so many years. But he had died in terror. It had been on the 7th day of the Armada. Blackthorn was commanding 100-ton gaff-rigged ketch out of Portsmouth, running arms and powder and shot and food to Drake's war galleons off Dover, as they harried and tore into the enemy fleet, which was beating up the channel toward Dunkirk, where the Spanish legions lay, waiting to transship to conquer England. The great Spanish fleet had been ripped by storms and by the more vicious, more sleek, more manoeuvrable warships that Drake and Howard had built. Blackthorn had been in a swirling attack near Admiral Howard's flagship, Renown, when the wind had changed, freshened to gale force, the squalls monstrous, and he had had to decide whether to try to beat to windward to escape the broadside that would burst from the great galleon Santa Cruz just ahead, or to run before the wind alone, through the enemy squadron, the rest of Howard's ships having already turned about, hacking more northerly.
Go north to windward!
Alban Caradoc had shouted. He had shipped as second in command. Blackthorn was captain pilot and responsible, and this his first command. Auburn Caradoc had insisted on coming to the fight, even though he had no right to be aboard, except that he was an Englishman, and all Englishmen had the right to be aboard in this darkest time in history.
Belay there!
Blackthorn had ordered, and had swung the tiller southward, heading into the moor of the enemy fleet, knowing the other way would leave them doomed by the guns of the galleon that now towered above them. So they had gone southerly, racing before the wind, through the galleon. The three-deck cannonade of the Santa Cruz passed safely overhead, and he got off 2 broadsides into her, flea bites to so huge a vessel, and then they were scudding through the centre of the enemy. The galleons on either side did not wish to fire at this lone ship, for their broadsides might have damaged each other, so the gun stayed silent. Then his ship was through and escaping when a 3-deck cannonade from the Madre de Dios straddled them. Both their masts careened away like arrows, men enmeshed in the rigging. Half the starboard main deck had vanished, the dead and the dying everywhere. He had seen Auburn Caradoc lying against a shattered gun carriage, so incredibly tiny, without legs. He cradled the old seaman, whose eyes were almost starting out of his head, his screams hideous.
Oh, Christ! I don't want to die! Don't want to die! Help! Help me! Help me, help me! Oh, Jesus Christ! It's the pain! Help!
Blackthorn knew there was only one thing he could do for Auburn Caradoc. He picked up a belaying pin and smashed down with all his force. Then, weeks later, he had to tell Felicity that her father was dead. He told her no more than that Auburn Caradoc had been killed instantly. He did not tell her he had blood on his hands that would never come off. Blackthorn and the samurai were walking through a wide winding street now. There were no shops, only houses side by side, each within its own land and high fences, the houses and fences and the road itself, all staggeringly clean. This cleanliness was incredible to Blackthorn, because in London and the cities and towns of England and Europe, offal and night soil and urine were cast into the streets, to be scavenged or allowed to pile up until pedestrians and carts and horses could not pass. Only then would most townships perhaps cleanse themselves. The scavengers of London were great herds of swine that were driven through the main thoroughfares nightly. Mostly the rats and the packs of wild dogs and cats and fires did the cleansing of London. And the flies. But Osaka was so different.
How do they do it? He asked himself. No potholes, no piles of horse dung, no wheel ruts, no filth or refuse of any sort. Just hard-packed earth, swept and clean. Walls of wood and houses of wood, sparkling and neat. And where are the packs of beggars and cripples that fester every township in Christendom? And the gangs of footpads and wild youths that would inevitably be skulking in the shadows.
The people they passed bowed politely. Some knelt. Kaga men hurried along with palanquins, or the one-passenger kagas. Parties of samurai, greys, never browns, walked the streets carelessly. They were walking a shop-lined street when his legs gave out. He toppled heavily and landed on his hands and knees. The samurai helped him up, but for the moment, his strength had gone, and he could walk no further.
Gomen nasai, dozo ga matsu.
I'm sorry, please wait, he said, his legs cramped. He rubbed his knotted calf muscles and blessed Friar Domingo for the priceless things that the man had taught him. The samurai leader looked down at him and spoke at length.
Gomen nasai, nihon go ga hanasa masen.
I'm sorry, I don't speak Japanese, Blackthorn replied, slowly but clearly.
Dozo ga matsu. Ah, so des, Anjinsen. Wakarimasu,
the man said, understanding him. He gave a short, sharp command, and one of the samurai hurried away. After a while, Blackthorn got up, tried to hobble along, but the leader of the samurai said,
Iye,
and motioned him to wait. Soon the samurai came back with four semi-naked kaga men and their kaga. Samurai showed Blackthorn how to recline in it and to hold on to the strap that hung from the central pole. The party set off again. Soon Blackthorn recovered his strength and preferred walking again, but he knew he was still weak.
I've got to get some rest, he thought. I've no reserve. I must get a bath and some food. Real food.
Now they were climbing wide steps that joined one street to another and entered a new residential section that skirted a substantial wood with tall trees and paths through it. Blackthorn found it vastly enjoyable to be out of the streets, the well-tended sward soft underfoot, the track wandering through the trees. When they were deep in the wood, another party of 30-odd greys approached from around a curve ahead. As they came alongside, they stopped. And after the usual ceremonial of their captains greeting each other, all their eyes turned on Blackthorn. There was a volley of questions and answers, and then, as these men began to reassemble to leave, their leader calmly pulled out his sword and impaled the leader of Blackthorn's samurai. Simultaneously, the new group fell on the rest of Blackthorn's samurai. The ambush was so sudden and so well planned that all 10 greys were dead almost at the same instant. Not one had even had time to draw his sword. The kaga men were on their knees, horrified, their foreheads pressed into the grass. Blackthorn stood beside them. The captain samurai, a heavy-set man with a large paunch, sent sentries to either end of the track. Others were collecting the swords of the dead men. During all of this, the men paid Blackthorn no attention at all, until he began to back away. Immediately there was a hissing command from the captain, which clearly meant to stay where he was. At another command, all these new greys stripped off their uniform kimonos. Underneath, they wore a motley collection of rags and ancient kimonos. All pulled on masks that were already tied around their necks. One man collected the grey uniforms and vanished with them into the woods.
They must be bandits, Blackthorn thought. Why else the masks? What do they want with me?
The bandits chattered quietly among themselves, watching him as they cleaned their swords on the clothes of the dead samurai.
Anjin-san,
eh?
The captain's eyes above the cloth mask were round and jet and piercing.
"Hi," Blackthorn replied, his skin crawling.
The man pointed at the ground, clearly telling him not to move.
"Wakarimasuka?"
"Hi." They looked him up and down. Then one of their outpost sentries, no longer grey-uniformed but masked, like all of them, came out of the bushes for an instant, 100 paces away. He waved and vanished again. Immediately the men surrounded Blackthorn, preparing to leave. The bandit captain put his eyes on the Kaga men, who shivered like dogs of a cruel master, and put their heads deeper into the grass. Then the bandit leader barked an order. The four slowly raised their heads with disbelief. Again the same command, and they bowed and grovelled and backed away. Then, as one, they took to their heels and vanished into the undergrowth. The bandit smiled contemptuously and motioned Blackthorn to begin walking back toward the city. He went with them, helplessly. There was no running away. They were almost to the edge of the wood when they stopped. There were noises ahead, and another party of 30 samurai rounded the bend. Browns and greys, the browns the vanguard, their leader in a palanquin, a few pack horses following. They stopped immediately. Both groups moved into skirmish positions, eyeing each other hostilely, 70 paces between them. The bandit leader walked into the space between, his movements jerky, and shouted angrily at the other samurai, pointing at Blackthorn and then farther back to where the ambush had taken place. He tore out his sword, held it threateningly on high, obviously telling the other party to get out of the way. All the swords of his men sang out of their scabbards. At his order, one of the bandits stationed himself behind Blackthorn, his sword raised and readied, and again the leader harangued the opposition. Nothing happened for a moment. Then Blackthorn saw the man in the palanquin get down, and he instantly recognized him. It was Kashigi Yabu. Yabu shouted back at the bandit leader, but this man shook his sword furiously, ordering them out of the way. His tirade stopped with finality. Then Yabu gave a curt order and charged with a screaming battle cry, limping slightly, sword high, his men rushing with him, greys not far behind. Blackthorn dropped to escape the sword blow that would have cut him in half, but the blow was ill-timed and the bandit leader turned and fled into the undergrowth, his men following. The browns and the greys were quickly alongside Blackthorn, who scrambled to his feet. Some of the samurai charged after the bandits in the bushes, others ran up the track, and the rest scattered protectively. Yabu stopped at the edge of the brush, shouted orders imperiously, then came back slowly, his limp more pronounced.
"So this, Anshin-san," he said, panting from his exertion. "So des, Kashigi Yabu-san,"
Blackthorn replied, using the same phrase which meant something like, "well," or, "oh really," or, "is that the truth?" He pointed in the direction that the bandits had run away.
"Domo."
He bowed politely, equal to equal, and said another blessing for Friar Domingo.
"Gomen nasai, Nihongo ga hanasemasen."
"I'm sorry, I can't speak Japanese."
"Aye,"
Yabu said, not a little impressed, and added something that Blackthorn did not understand.
"Tuyaku ga emasuka?"
Blackthorn asked. "Do you have an interpreter?"
"Iye, Anjin-san. Gomen nasai."
Blackthorn felt a little easier. Now he could communicate directly. His vocabulary was sparse, but it was a beginning.
"Iye. I wish I did have an interpreter,"
Yabu was thinking fervently.
"By the Lord Buddha, I'd like to know what happened when you met Toranaga, Anjin-san. What questions he asked, and what you answered. What you told him about the village, and guns, and cargo, and ship, and galley, and about Rodrigo. I'd like to know everything that was said, and how it was said, and where you've been, and why you're here. Then I'd have an idea of what was in Toranaga's mind, the way he's thinking. Then I could plan what I'm going to tell him today, As it is now, I'm helpless. Why did Toranaga see you immediately when we arrived, and not me? Why no words or orders from him since we docked until today, other than the obligatory polite greeting and, I look forward with pleasure to seeing you shortly? Why has he sent for me today? Why has our meeting been postponed twice? Was it because of something you said? Or Hiromatsu? Or is it just a normal delay, caused by all his other worries? Oh yes, Toranaga. You've got almost insurmountable problems. Ishido's influence is spreading like fire. And do you know about Lord Onoshi's treachery yet? Do you know that Ishido has offered me Ikawa Jikyu's head and province if I secretly join him now? Why did you pick today to send for me? Which good kami put me here to save the Anjin-san's life, only to taunt me because I can't talk directly to him, or even through someone else, to find the key to your secret lock? Why did you put him into prison for execution? Why did Ishido want him out of prison? Why did the bandits try to capture him for ransom? Ransom from whom? And why is the Anjin-san still alive? That bandit should have easily cut him in half.
Yabu noticed the deeply etched lines that had not been in Blackthorn's face the first time he had seen him.
He looks starved, thought Yabu. He's like a wild dog. But not one of the pack. The leader of the pack, nay? Oh, yes, pilot. I'd give 1,000 koku for a trustworthy interpreter right now. I'm going to be your master. You're going to build my ships and train my men. I have to manipulate Toranaga somehow. If I can't, it doesn't matter. In my next life, I'll be better prepared. Good dog,
Yabu said aloud to Blackthorn, and smiled slightly.
All you need is a firm hand, a few bones, and a few whippings. First, I'll deliver you to Lord Toranaga, after you've been bathed. You stink, Lord Pilot.
Blackthorn did not understand the words, but he sensed friendliness in them, and saw Yabu smile. He smiled back.
Wakarimasen.
I don't understand.
Hi, Anjin-san.
The daimyo turned away and glanced after the bandits. He cupped his hands around his mouth and shouted. Instantly, all the browns returned to him. The chief samurai of the Greys was standing in the center of the track, and he too called off the chase. None of the bandits were brought back. When this captain of the Greys came up to Yabu, there was much argument and pointing to the city and to the castle, and obvious disagreement between them. At length, Yabu overrode him, his hand on his sword, and motioned Blackthorn to get into the palanquin.
Iye,
the captain said. The two men were beginning to square up to one another, and the Greys and the Browns shifted nervously.
Anjin-san, the Shujin Toranaga-sama.
Blackthorn caught a word here, another there. Watakushi meant I. Hitachi added, meant we. Shujin meant prisoner. And then he remembered what Riguez had said, so he shook his head and interrupted sharply.
Shujin, Iye, Watakushi wa Anjin-san.
Both men stared at him. Blackthorn broke the silence and added in halting Japanese, knowing the words to be ungrammatical and childishly spoken, but hoping they would be understood.
I friend, not prisoner. Understand, please. Friend. So sorry. Friend want bath. Bath. Understand? Tired. Hungry. Bath.
He pointed to the castle donjon.
Go there. Now, please. Lord Toranaga 1. Lord Ishido 2. Go now.
and with added imperiousness on the last imma, he got awkwardly into the palanquin and lay down on the cushions, his feet sticking far out. Then Yabu laughed, and everyone joined in.
"Ah, so, Anjin-sama,"
Yabu said, with a mocking bow.
"Iye, Yabu-sama. Anjin-san,"
Blackthorn corrected him contentedly.
"Yes, you bastard. I know a thing or two now. But I haven't forgotten about you. And soon I'll be walking on your grave."
Chapter 16.
"Perhaps it would have been better to consult me before removing my prisoner from my jurisdiction, Lord Ishido,"
Toranaga was saying.
"The barbarian was in the common prison with common people. Naturally, I presumed you had no further interest in him. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had him taken out of there. Of course, I never meant to interfere with your private affairs."
Ishido was outwardly calm and deferential, but inside he was seething. He knew that he had been trapped into an indiscretion. It was true that he should have asked Toranaga first. Ordinary politeness demanded it. Even that would not have mattered at all if he still had the barbarian in his power, in his quarters. He would simply have handed over the foreigner at his leisure, if and when Toranaga had asked for him. But for some of his men to have been intercepted and ignominiously killed, and then for the Daimyo Yabu and some of Toranaga's men to have taken physical possession of the barbarian from more of his men, changed the position completely. He had lost face, whereas his whole strategy for Toranaga's public destruction was to put Toranaga into precisely that position.
"Again, I apologize."
Toranaga glanced at Hiromatsu, the apology music to their ears. Both men knew how much inner bleeding it had cost Ishido. They were in the great audience room. By prior agreement, the two antagonists had only 5 guards present, men of guaranteed reliability. The rest were waiting outside. Yabu was also waiting outside. And the barbarian was being cleaned.
"Good,"
Toranaga thought, feeling very pleased with himself. He put his mind on Yabu briefly, and decided not to see him today after all, but to continue to play him like a fish. So he asked Hiromatsu to send him away, and turned again to Ishido.
"Of course your apology is accepted. Fortunately, no harm was done."
"Then I may take the barbarian to the heir as soon as he's presentable?"
"I'll send him as soon as I've finished with him."
"May I ask when that will be?
The heir was expecting him this morning." "We shouldn't be too concerned about that, you and I, ne? Yeamon's only 7. I'm sure a 7-year-old boy can possess himself with patience, ne? Patience is a form of discipline and requires practice, doesn't it? I'll explain the misunderstanding myself. I'm giving him another swimming lesson this morning."
"Oh?
Yes. You should learn to swim too, Lord Ishido. It's excellent exercise, and could come in very useful during war. All my samurai can swim. I insist that all learn that art."
"Mine spend their time practicing archery, swordsmanship, riding, and shooting."
"Mine add poetry, penmanship, flower arranging, the Chanoyu ceremony. Samurai should be well versed in the arts of peace, to be strong for the arts of war."
"Most of my men are already more than proficient in those arts,"
Ishido said, conscious that his own writing was poor and his learning limited.
"Samurai are birthed for war. I understand war very well. That is enough at the moment. That and obedience to our master's will."
"Yeamon's swimming lesson is at the hour of the horse."
The day and the night were each split into 6 equal parts. The day began with the hour of the hare, from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. Then the dragon, from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. The hours of the snake, horse, goat, monkey, cock, dog, boar, rat, and ox